Welcome this morning to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and it is my great pleasure to choose to serve this transforming, changing, energetic, full of possibility congregation. I feel like this congregation is just like the spring, blooming everywhere. Yesterday, I was really lucky. I got to do a three-hour RE workshop yesterday morning, and then in the afternoon, I was with Barb Hansen as she was celebrating with many people her transition from Portland to Seattle, and got to see so many people. And then in the evening, I went to a murder mystery party, which I had bought in the auctions with many other woofers. And there was even somebody who held an English accent for the entire time of the party, which the rest of us were just like in awe, because we were all like blundering about with our accents and our characters. It was pretty fun. And so it just feels like there's just so many ways that we are community together, and the way we support and celebrate and think and consider all of those things. And it's such a pleasure to be with you. And I want you to know that each and every one of you is a real gift. Just like the flowers that bloom, you are a life energy blooming. And it is such a joy whenever we get to see each other's gifts. So I hope you can shine with your gifts, because you are really welcome here. And I have a couple of announcements. There is an Article 2 conversation after this downstairs in Forest Hall. That actually is sort of an informal affair where people who are still wanting to have some more conversation about that can. I will not be there, but there will be other people there who want to talk about Article 2. And there's coffee after service downstairs, and there's sunshine in the courtyard, so get together and talk to one another. And there's also coffee service online. You can click on the Zoom link in your order of service and meet with other people from our congregation. So I would just like you to all take a moment and say hello to each other. You do not need to start conversations. Those can happen later. This is really like just welcoming the beloved life energy of each other. Oh, maybe that would be fun. Each time, try to challenge people, because some people hate this so much. I've learned. Like, they're like, I don't want to have a conversation with people. Dan Boyce is going to offer us a stewardship moment.
Thank you. Am I on?
No.
He's
no.
Bringing it up. Just happened.
Okay.
No.
We're just testing.
You have to belt it out now. I can do that.
Okay. Well.
It's on.
Hello.
Well, I'll just talk and you can hear me, although
the people online
may not be able to hear me, so I'm sorry about that. Well, for the last several months, in the signature block of my emails, I've had a short quote from the spiritual teacher Ram Dass that says, "We're all just walking each other home." What does it mean to walk you home? What does he mean when he says we're walking each other home? Good morning, I'm Dan Boyce, and Karen Stratton asked me once again to do a last stewardship moment as we close out our stewardship drive today, where we ask you who are connected with this congregation as members and friends to let us know what you intend to pledge this coming year. As of Friday, we had 87 pledges for a total of over $170,000, an average pledge of nearly $2,000 per pledge unit. For those who have pledged already, thank you for your generosity. If you haven't, please do so downstairs after the service today or online. There's a QR code. If you need assistance, don't hesitate to contact me or Karen Stratton, or Uwe Neitzel, or Tracy. With about 40 pledges still outstanding, it appears that we may fall a bit short of our ambitious $225,000 goal, but we're within hollering distance. At this moment, every dollar counts. Please consider what this community means to you and pledge generously. So back to my question, what did Ram Dass mean when he said we're all just walking each other home? I think he was talking about the generous human gesture of caring deeply for one another, helping us each to understand what is needed to feel at peace in this hectic and sometimes difficult world, helping us divine what is truly important in our lives, helping us stay true to ourselves. He's talking about the act, the sacred act of accompaniment, not just physical accompaniment, but soulful accompaniment as well. You may recall in my previous stewardship moment, I said that life is just a chance to grow a soul. That's the what. Ram Dass gives us a glimpse as to how. We do this by physically or metaphorically walking with one another. I've heard it said that the religious task is to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comfortable. If we seek to accompany others and be accompanied, and who isn't? I can think of no better community to find fellow travelers than West Hills UU Fellowship. Here you find thoughtful, smart, and discerning friends, people who can challenge you when needed, clarify ideas and ideals, shake us out of our complacency, provide compassionate help when needed, support each other in our common quest to find home. This is one way to transform and be transformed through acts of generosity. This community deserves your support because its purpose is to support you in your journey toward finding home in this world and helping others find their home. And at the individual level, what could be more important than that? Let us walk together in gratefulness and in generosity, making our lives and this world a better place.
All fierce unrest seeds at the core of all existing things. It was the eager wish to soar that gave the God their wings. There throbs through all the worlds that are this heartbeat, hot and strong, and shaken system, star by star, awake and glow in song. But for the urge of this unrest, these joyous fears are mute. But for the rebel in our breast, had we remained as brutes, when baffled lips demanded speech, speech trembled into breath, one day the lyric word shall reach from earth to laughing earth. From deed to dream, from deed to dream, from daring hope to hope, the restless wish, the instant need, still drove us up the slope. Sing, we know governed firmament, cold ordered regular, we sing the stinging discontent that leaps from star to star.
people are still coming in, so if people can scoot in a little bit, we can find seats for people. Thank you. So now we're going to light the chalice, and I invite Paisley up to do our chalice lighting this morning. May this flame, symbol of transformation, which is our theme, since time began, fire our curiosity, strengthen our wills, and sustain our courage. We seek what is good within us and all around us. Let us say our affirmation together. When we open our let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love ourselves and our neighbors.
Well, good morning to you. We're top of the... I hear that in Ireland, they actually don't say top of the morning to you. I talked to someone who went there, and they said, we don't say that. So that's how they know you're an American. So don't say that if you go to Ireland. So I see we have some wee green people with us today, and a few, and even a leprechaun over here on the side. So happy St. Paddy's Day. It's my best Irish. It's the best I can do. So. All right. Hi, everyone. Good morning. My name is Brad Hewitt. My pronouns are he and him. I'm your lay leader this morning. Happy to be with you today. I do have a reading for us from Arian Goff. Thresholds by Arian Goff. Thresholds. We cross them every day, from room to room, from outside to inside and back again, from here to there. From anywhere to everywhere, from age to age, each threshold offers an opportunity for change, for renewal, for transformation, from what we were and what we are to what we can be. In this hour, in this place, we cross a threshold from our day-to-day everydayness into space and time attuned to each other, to the sacred, to the holy, into an awareness of new life pregnant with possibilities. How will we be renewed in this moment? How will we be changed by this hour? How will we be transformed through the gathering of beloved community? Come, you longing, thirsty souls. Come, let us worship together.
Hello. To dream the impossible dream. To fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to right the impossible wrong, to love pure and chaste from afar, to try when your arms are too weary, to reach the unreachable star. This is my quest, to follow that star, no matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to fight for the right without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know, if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest. And the world will be better for this, that one man, scorned and covered with scars, still strove
with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable star.
This quarter's Donate the Basket is the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice, also called Emerge Sanctuary Fund, which advocates with a collective of faith communities, of which WIF is a part, to respond actively and publicly to the suffering of our immigrant kin in the U.S. due to unjust immigration policies. This sanctuary fund directly helps asylum seekers and refugees with financial support for food, rent, and other basic needs. The fund is a critical component to assisting a network of volunteers and organizations working to support and welcome refugees, asylum seekers, and their families to Oregon. To hear more about the Sanctuary Fund in action, you can actually check out online our October 1st, 2023 service on our YouTube channel. And they will be receiving the proceeds of today's collection. So with that, if our host will please come forward. Thank you for your gifts. If you'll please join me in our affirmation of gratitude and giving.
Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may
So I would like to invite any children up who would like to come and hear the story up in the front this morning. If everyone has seats, there are more seats up here, so if you're needing a seat. So good morning, and I am here to tell you a story that is from the Hebrew Bible, and it is called Jonah and the Whale. Even though there's not really a whale in the story, that is what we call it. So once there was a man named Jonah, and he was Hebrew, and he believed in the Hebrew God, who he called the Lord the God. And he was pretty much a really ordinary guy. He just, you know, he went to work, he came home, he watched some sports, he went out with his friends. You know, he was just an ordinary guy. And one day, he hears the voice of God, and God says, I want you to go to the city of Nineveh and proclaim that I'm going to destroy the city in 40 days because they are so evil. They are terrible there. There's tons of violence. They shoot each other. They steal from each other. Everybody's selfish. Nobody ever looks out for anybody. I am so done with Nineveh, and you need to go tell them. And Jonah's like, yeah, no. And so he got on a ship. He ran to the port, and he got on a ship that was going the opposite way of Nineveh. And God, the Lord, said, no. And so he started a huge storm. It was the biggest storm ever, and that ship was rocking back and forth, and all the sailors and the captain on the ship were down on their knees praying to whoever their gods were like crazy, and Jonah went downstairs and took a nap. He did not want anything to do with this. Like, he was out. He was in denial. And the captain came down and woke him, and he said, "Do you know anything about this? Why is this happening?" And Jonah just said, I don't know. And so the sailors all drew lots to sort of determine whose fault this huge storm was, who had offended their God, and it landed on Jonah. And so then he admitted, "Well, you know, God wanted me to do this thing, and I said no, and here we're having this storm. You should probably throw me overboard." And the sailors are like, we can't just throw an innocent man in the ocean, because they were good people. They just were not into that. So they started to sail, row as hard as they could to outbeat that storm. They were going to get to land, and the storm just got stronger and stronger, and they were getting pushed backward, and the boat was going like this. And so finally they're like, "Yeah, Jonah, we're going to throw you overboard." So they threw Jonah into the sea. And Jonah's like drowning, the wind stops, the sailor and boat are saved, and Jonah is just, he's drowning. And then this huge fish, maybe it was a whale, this huge fish came and swallowed him. And it was so good, because he was not drowning, he was alive. And so he was so grateful, like, and he began to just pray to his God. In the Hebrew Bible, actually, the prayer is quite long, and so I will not share it all with you, but basically he is saying, "Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, I am alive." And then he stays there for like 3 days in this state, and finally at the end he says, "Okay, God, I will go to Nineveh." And so the whale vomits him out onto the shore. And I will tell you, the Hebrew Bible actually says vomit. So there it is. Vomited him out onto the shore, and he goes to Nineveh. And Nineveh is a huge town. It takes 3 days to walk across it. But Jonah gets out there on the streets, and he just starts telling people, "Hey, Lord, the God told me you're really evil, and he's going to destroy the town." Well, surprisingly, the people of Nineveh also believed in the Hebrew God that Jonah believed in, and they got really scared. And they're like, "Oh my goodness, we better repent." And so they all put on sackcloth. And sackcloth is like burlap. It's like a brown bag that you would just wear that wasn't very comfortable and kind of itchy. And so they all put on sackcloth. They stopped eating. They started fasting. And they started praying, "Oh God, we will change our ways. We will stop murdering each other. We will stop stealing. We will maybe support and love each other." And the king heard the proclamation, and he ordered the whole city, "Everybody, you need to put on sackcloth, you need to stop, you need to fast, and you need to pray. And we're going to fix this. We are going to be good to each other." And everybody's like, "Yes, we will be good." And so God was like, "Yeah, that worked good. So I'm not going to destroy you." And Jonah was so mad. He was furious, because his whole fear had been that he would go to this town, walk through the city, make this proclamation, and then it wouldn't happen. And then he would just look like an idiot and a fool, because who walks around town telling everybody it's going to be destroyed, right? Like, it's a pretty weird thing to do. So he's feeling really, you know, upset. He leaves town. He goes up on this bare hillside, makes himself a little shelter because it's really hot, and he just pouts. And so God makes this green plant grow up, this really big green plant that was really shady and lovely, and Jonah began to rest and relax, and then God killed the plant, and he was really hot and dry, and Jonah was even more mad. He was so mad at God. Like, what are you doing? Like, you don't destroy the city, you kill my plant. And God said to him, "So you're upset about this death of this plant, but you weren't upset about the possibility of destroying hundreds of thousands of people. Like, get with it." And so Jonah did. And he grew to be more compassionate man who went on with his life. And that is the end of our story. And we are going to sing our children to their classes.
Thank you.
So now's the time to take a deep breath and settle into your seats. Life is such a conundrum. It is so full of joy and beauty and possibility and wonder. And sometimes it's just really hard. It's painful. We get thrown against the rocks. We feel bad about ourselves. We feel bad about other people's suffering. And so that's one thing we try to hold in community, that conundrum of life. And in this moment, I ask you to think about the things right now that are joys in your life, the real wonders, and also the things that are really hard. And we will hold them in this community of compassion. And you can come forward up this aisle and drop a stone for your joy or your sorrow that we will hold here for you. And I don't have a microphone this morning, but if you do want to say something, you're welcome to say a sentence or so about your joy or sorrow. You can just turn around and look at the congregation and speak loud today. All right.
All my fear will burn away. I know my soul will unfurl its wings. I know this rose will open. I know this rose will open.
I know this rose will open.
I know my fear will burn
away. I know my
fear will burn away.
I know my soul will unfurl its wings.
That song in and settle into your chairs for a time of meditation, reflection, or prayer, as is your tradition. We begin with these words. We look with uncertainty beyond the old choices for clear-cut answers to a softer, more permeable aliveness, which is every moment at the brink of death. For something new is born in us if we but let it. We stand at a new doorway, awaiting that which comes, daring to be human creatures, vulnerable to the beauty of existence, learning to love. We will now have an extended silence. Consider, what is being born in you? Is there a curiosity, a new perception, a way of being, a new skill, a challenge? What is being born within you?
So I'd like to try something a little different. I get so tired of standing up here. So if you do me a favor, close your eyes. I'm going to have a reading and just kind of listen, and I'm going to walk around the room. And since my mic is working, you can really hear me. This is called "For When I Really Don't Want." Till I said it was working. For when I really don't want to learn this, by the Reverend Elizabeth Wynn. Spirit, I would really rather not learn this. Didn't think I needed to. I thought someone else could do it. Thought a leader was coming to do it. Thought the young people could do it, or the elders could do it, or the professionals. I don't want to learn it, because it means letting go of something I hold dear. Letting go of being someone who knows the answers. Letting go of being someone who doesn't know. Letting go of the way I see the world. Letting go of how I might have to change. Letting go of certainty, of logic, of facts, of control. Of the myth that you can live on this earth and not harm. Or the myth that I can learn anything new. Help me to learn it, please. And then help me to live what I have learned and do right by the gift of being taught.
I was called to be a Unitarian Universalist minister largely because I liked ritual and love the way the faith communities mark the year with traditions. I love that week in and week out we return to this place of worship to center ourselves. I love that the year is marked by water communion, Day of the Dead, Christmas, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Easter, flower communion. I like the sameness of it. I like that I can count on these things as markers of my week and my year. And I like all that sameness because I really do not like change. So I became a minister. And I discovered it had all been a really big cosmic joke. If I believed in a God with human characteristics, she would surely be laughing. Yes, serving as a minister does mean marking traditions, but otherwise, everything in ministry is about change. We mark transformations in baby blessings, weddings, memorial services. We hold each other through hard changes and celebrate the joyful ones. Our work together is all about transformation and change, transforming ourselves to become more fully alive and loving beings, and transforming our world into our vision of the beloved community. It is the traditions and rituals that hold us, why everything that we do is opportunities for transformation. And perhaps it's just small transformations, like coming on Sunday and finding just a bit more energy or a little more hope after a difficult week, or discovering a new friendship with someone that really transforms your experience of life. Or it might be really large transformations, like making decisions and commitments to live and act differently than you did before. And life is change. That is just the absolute nature of existence. Things fall apart. They come together in new ways. They fall apart again. They come together. We experience grace. We choose new paths, or new paths choose us. We are together to support that change, as Dan talked so beautifully about this morning. We walk together. We support each other. We are all just so human. We were born into a world with a particular temperament, with a body and neurons that are inclined to fire in one way or another, which could be slightly different than everyone else you know. And these can make our lives so much easier or more difficult, as is in this particular culture and society. It's possible your way of being just doesn't match this particular culture and society, or it brilliantly matches. And then we all, you know, grow up in childhood. And as babies, every baby yearns for perfect love. And they're pretty good at getting people to do it. But human parents can't give perfect love. It's impossible. And all of us craved it. And then you add to that, and then we were disappointed. And you add to that abuse and neglect, bullying and shaming, dangerous neighborhoods, and a devastating economic system for so many people. And people come through childhood with a lot of pain and a lot of brokenness. Many people do. And adult life then hurts us and breaks us as well. We lose those we love. We are violated. People oppress us, look down on us. We fail. We are rejected. We are born in a culture that teaches us the hierarchies of racism, sexism, and classism as surely as it teaches us language. All the history, all the systems, all the traditions, all the practices that say certain kinds of people matter more than other kinds of people become part of the way our neurons learn to fire, twisting the way we experience ourselves and the world. And it is hard for those with damaged hearts and spirits to love well or purely, broken people defend their hearts, their spirits, their souls, sometimes in small ways and sometimes in big ones. It is so easy to be afraid. And this fear can hold us prisoner, making the truth of our own strength and the ways we are part of the web of life and of each other invisible to us. And transformation that helps us heal all that pain and brokenness can come in many ways to us. And sometimes it is so gentle and just unnoticed. But other times, though, it is a process of walking through fear and finding our strengths and gifts and experiencing ourselves and this world in new and different ways than we ever did before. When we transform, we are able to act and be in ways in the world we could not be before or maybe even have imagined. And we can open our hearts to the experience of life and to the experience of love. So how does that kind of transformation happen? During a lifetime of work on mythology, Joseph Campbell identified a recurring story across the world's cultures. He called it the hero's journey. And the hero's journey is one story, one of the stories that we tell about human transformation. The hero experiences a fundamental change in the understanding of life, its purpose and meaning, and their place in it that makes the hero a more compassionate, fully alive person. We all know the hero's journey. We have heard it, read it, and seen it hundreds of times. It's Frodo Baggins, that comfortable hobbit, thrust one ordinary day into the epic battle of good against evil. And Odysseus, whose bad luck and bad judgment kept him trying to get home from the Trojan Wars for years. And Dorothy, who wakes to find herself in Oz. And Luke Skywalker, who finds a strange droid on his doorstep. Heroes are usually transformed on the journeys they did not plan to take. These journeys land them in situations where they discover a great fear or danger and they overcome it. Anyone can, and most of us do, embark upon the hero's journey at various times in our lives. The minister Bill Hauff, in his book, Infinity in Your Hand, relates a story about penguins told by Eknath Iswaran. Pilgrims build nests on craggy rocks at cliff edges and fall toward the icy Antarctic Sea. When the babies hatch, parents shelter their young, protecting them and bringing food so they are no longer in danger from the sheer cliffs or the cold. The babies eat and they sleep and they snuggle, and it's just a great life. Then one day, when the babies begin to molt, the parents walk out. That's right. They just leave. They walk out en masse. It's like this big unannounced strike. And the babies are alone. We have all had that moment at least once in our lives. The moment when everything we understood and expected about life simply was not true anymore. Maybe it was a divorce or a death. Or a diagnosis, or an accident, or a lost job. Maybe it was even something we wanted, like a baby, or a retirement, or a different job, or leaving home for college. But the new reality was so different than how life had been before. We were just having our lives like those baby penguins, expecting the day to roll on out like every other day. We had expectations, we had knowledge and skills and attitudes and ways of being that served us well in the reality and story we were living. We had ideas about life and meaning and success that seemed true to us. We were on the road. And suddenly, what we knew and understand was not true anymore. Joseph Campbell labeled this moment the call to the journey. The call happens first. Frodo is called on by visitors, baby penguins by their parents' abandonment, Dorothy by waking, Jonah by God, and Don Quixote by adventure. Being called back, being called can be an utter shock. You don't expect these visitors, this abandonment, this waking in a weird world, are surely the voice of God. You don't expect the pink slip to watch the loved one die during a traffic stop, a COVID pandemic, or to be experiencing the symptoms of Alzheimer's. Since the call is such a shock and often unwanted, the heroes in the stories and those of us in real life typically refuse the call. We simply say no, or we refuse to acknowledge what is happening, like Jonah going to have a nap. Or we begin, we bargain and try to make a deal so that whatever is happening will just stop happening now. According to S. Warren, the baby penguins appeared shocked and dazed. Then they huddle in their nests, waiting for their parents to return. Clearly, there had been a mistake. Jonah ran for the nearest ship sailing out of Nineveh. Luke told Obi-Wan he would not leave his aunt and uncle. But in the story and life, the situation does not change, or it gets worse. The baby chicks begin to get hungry. The winds endanger Jonah's ship and all the people on it. The last day of work arrives. The symptoms of dementia persist. One child will not return our calls. Dorothy is struck in awe. Luke's aunt and uncle are dead. And so the journey begins. Everything is new. We do not know our way. We do not know where to go. We don't know how to manage. We don't know the rules. So we step out into this new world, grasping to whatever we find. We are tested and challenged. If we do well, we find new friends and allies and maybe even a mentor. We make mistakes. We fail some of the tests and bungle the challenges, having to try and try again. But sometimes we succeed and we learn. We learn new ways of being and understanding. We gain traction in this world. On day three, some of the penguins get out of their nests and begin to look around. One penguin, who S. Warren calls Peter, peers over the cliff edge. Then he hurries right back and informs the others that the cliff is dangerous. His friends stay away after that, and they all continue to search whatever is needed in the craggy rocks. Dorothy begins down the yellow brick road. Luke takes off with Obi-Wan. We go to the doctor again. We apply for more jobs. We read and ask questions. We meet new people and make new friends. We are rejected. We are given hope. We learn. At last, however, the hero comes to the entrance of the innermost cave. In the cave is the worst danger. It is what we fear the most. It is what the hero has been dreading from the beginning, whether they knew it or not. The penguin's hunger overwhelms them. The wicked witch of the West kidnaps Dorothy and her friends. The Death Star strikes Luke and his comrades inside. The notice that unemployment is running out comes in the mail. The doctor says hospice involvement is appropriate. Then the inevitable happens. We enter the cave. It is the dark moment, the descent into the underworld, the fight to the death. We must face a great fear, and we are confident it will kill us. And it almost does. It nearly almost does. But then something else happens. We do not let it kill us. Instead, we pay attention to it. We allow our gifts and our strengths to come to our aid. In some stories, there's an all-out violent battle. But in other stories, like The Wizard of Oz, it melts. Sometimes we make friends with it. We live. But the outcome is fear no longer controls us, and we are transformed. We have healed a bit of our brokenness. When the baby penguins are near starvation, Peter makes his way slowly back to the cliff. He is clearly afraid, but anything seems better than starvation. He closes his eyes. Then with one brave leap, he hurdles himself into the air and disappears beneath the waves. Dorothy is paralyzed as the witch moves closer to the scarecrow with a lighted match. Desperate to do something, she grabs what is available to her, a pail of water, and throws it on the witch. Jonah tells the sailors to throw him overboard. We surrender our physical care to nurses and family. We ask for help. This is what the hero's journey tells us is required. To face the great fear, knowing it might kill us. When we don't let it, we change. We transform. Like a phoenix who rises from the ashes. Peter disappears beneath the waves. Then he bobs up bright-eyed with a slightly sheepish smile. He churns his wings and waggles his tail vigorously. Within minutes, he is swimming gracefully through the waves, at home at last. Jonah finally did what God asked, and God disappointed him. His worst fear, his great fear, to be made a fool of. But instead, he learns compassion. Dorothy discovers she is powerful. Luke learns to trust himself and the Force. Maybe we learn that family and friends matter more than possessions or prestige or job titles. We discover that receiving help is not a weakness, but a deeper way to experience love and our interconnection with others. Finally, the hero goes home, returning with our new insights and gifts from the journey. Peter squawks from the water up to his friends. Come on down. This is what we were born for. Dorothy clicks her ruby slippers 3 times and returns to Auntie Em and is able to tell her how much she loves her. Luke was not able to save his aunt and uncle, but he saves his sister and his friends. Maybe we allow our family to feel our love in a new way, or we can feel their love in a new way. Perhaps we are able to forgive ourselves or others. The hero's journey looks so straightforward on the big screen, or when we look back on our lives and see indeed that at least some of the transformations in our lives followed this pattern. But actually living it, this is a messy thing that does not feel linear at all. It can mostly just feel like confusion and pain. Do we always transform? No, not always. The first step of the hero's journey is the call and the answer to the call. In movies and at many times in our lives, we are called and the answer cannot be no. We are breaking up or we are ill and we must embark on a journey into new experiences we did not want to have. In real life, though, we often pretend we did not hear the call or we just say no to it. Maybe the call is gentle, maybe an invitation or a compelling desire to try something new, something outside our comfort, something that we think will make us look stupid or silly. Or maybe it is the possibility of authoritarianism or another row of tents and cardboard sheltering people without homes or out of control and harmful weather that calls us into action. Or maybe something pulls at us to live without fear, to attend to the sunlight in the trees instead of a jumble of things, or to forgive ourselves, or to see ourselves as beautiful. We can refuse the call, though. We can just stay home and be comfortable and do what we've always done. Or in other cases, we say yes to the call, but we abandon it partway through that journey. After the call, there is an unknown world where we don't know what to do or what the rules are. It can be uncomfortable and miserable, and we can feel stupid as we wander through a dark maze. All sorts of demons can rise up, reminding us how imperfect we are, how incapable we are, how unworthy we are, how we will always fail, how, in fact, there is no hope, so why even try? The parts of ourselves that defend against discomfort, vulnerability, and pain may get very, very loud in our heads and bodies and tell us not to trust, to lash out, to run, to freeze. If the journey is not absolutely required by life circumstances, it can just be so easy to back into the safety and comfort of our old ways of being and acting. If we do stay on the journey, at some point we are going to reach the darkest cave that holds that great, great fear. We may know what ours will be. We may know what's in that cave now, even. And sometimes we just absolutely have no idea till we get there. Maybe it's financial or physical pain or deep loss of what we've loved. Maybe it's the fear that we will never be loved or no love. Maybe it's a fear we will never be worthy, never feel worthy, never feel joy. Or it may be, as Wynne says in this morning's poem, letting go of being someone who knows the answers. She says, letting go of being someone who doesn't know. Letting go of the way I see the world. Letting go of how I might have to change. Letting go of certainty, of logic, of facts, of control. In the cave, we have to stand up to the fear and the danger. We have to let go of treasured ways of being. Ways of being that have worked for us in many ways. In movies and books, the hero always gets through the danger and always transforms in the way that is necessary for them to live a deeper, richer life. But real life isn't always like this. Whether the journey into the new world is demanded of us or we voluntarily choose to answer a call, we can collapse in that cave. We can retreat into anger, despair, self-righteousness, regret, cynicism, apathy. I mean, you know the whole list. We can lose that battle and not transform in a way that teaches us to use our gifts or gives us more compassion and kindness, helps us love ourselves, but reinforces our fearful, hurt selves. The hero's journey is dangerous, and it does not always go well. But it can go well. It can. People can and do transform all the time in this work. Which brings us back to the work of ministry and faith communities. One reason that we come together is to strengthen ourselves for the inevitable hero's journeys we will and that we can take, that we want to take. And we can remind ourselves to say yes to the invitational calls, because they can offer so much for the positive transformations we seek in our lives. We can support each other on those journeys. It's been lovely. Just yesterday, I heard several examples of the way people in this community have supported other people on the journeys in their lives that they were not wanting to take or that they did want to take but were hard. We do this work. We remind each other that we do have courage and the ability to face those fears in the cave. After the battles, we can celebrate together or patch each other up to try again. A faith community, WOOF, is a place of holy, life-giving work. It is a place where, as Dan said, we accompany each other true transformation. We create this community together to provide ourselves with that support. So let's do that together with great compassion and great love. We will now stand and sing 1022, Wo Ya Ya.
We are going, heaven knows where we are going, but we know within, and we will get there, heaven knows how we will.
You can stay standing. As you go into this day, feel the calls of your own heart, even if they flutter gently, and know that you have the support and the strength to make this journey. We will extinguish our chalice and let all of the warmth of this community and of our faith stay in your heart. You may now turn and sing, turn and we will sing Carry the Flame. The front half turns and the back people face each other. It's complicated, I know.